Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Jonesy, do we have John?
I'm here.
John McClain. Hey, what's happening, John? John McClain, brought to you by hornsolutions.net, joins us each and every week on the show. John, how you handling things these days?
I'm doing great, guys. I hope you are too. Hope all the listeners are staying safe and doing what they're supposed to be doing.
What are you doing these days confined from home, John?
I'm doing 16 talk shows. I'm writing every day for the Texas Sports Nation, doing podcasts, doing mock drafts, doing everything I usually do. And I'm trying to get a lot of exercise out in the neighborhood at night because it's cooler. Number one, there's not any people out at night. I went out last night about 10:15, got back about 11:30, and the weather was nice, and I didn't see but one person out at that time. And one of the things Carol and I did yesterday was drive around a little bit, and I was amazed at all the businesses that are still open. And I understand people trying to make money, including I saw a tanning salon, and I'm wondering who would go into a tanning salon and get into a tanning booth at a time like this.
Oh, they wipe those things down. Plus, John, this is the time for social media stardom. So somebody's got to look presentable in there. I understand why some young lady, some Instagram model needs to keep her perfect tan. But I don't approve of it, John. I don't approve.
John McClain joining us for his weekly visit on the show. All right, John. So it's been 9 days now since the DeAndre Hopkins trade. Has the vitriol from Texan fans towards you, not towards you, but that you receive via chat and email and things like that, has it died down at all?
No, I ran for the second consecutive week a special mailbag. Usually I do them on Friday. I did another one Tuesday because I had so many people wanting to sound off, and I always tell people, if they send me emails for the mailbag, and those things are presentable with minimal editing, then I'll run them. And so they're still sending them. I'm getting about 20 a day, and I've never seen a reaction like this at anything that's ever been done in Houston's pro football history. But I think now that people got even more time on their hands and have spent so much time in front of their computers or their smartphones, that I will continue to get them. And I told them, I said, feel free to talk about free agency, the draft, any other Texans player besides DeAndre Hopkins and anybody besides Bill O'Brien, Astros, Rockets, colleges, anything you want. But so far, there's still that one subject, and so many people are saying they're not going to watch them again. They're not going to they're canceling their season tickets. And I always tell them, you got to think of those great plays you would have missed by Deshaun Watson last year. And I think there's still a lot of excitement, of course, with him. But it's going to be a long time before this dies. I'm guessing it'll take a draft. And the way it is, maybe the draft gets pushed back. So it'll continue for quite a while.
John, not that this is first and foremost in the minds of the NFL right now, but it is kind of curious that typically after a free agency signing period after the first few days, a coach or a GM or both of them will do a press conference, you know, where they announce the new players and maybe they take some questions. Are we going to start seeing some either via video chat or whatever, some kind of ad hoc press conferences out of coaches, Bill O'Brien specifically?
I would doubt it, because one of the things they probably like is not having to deal with the media. You know, we've seen some teams put free agents they've signed or players, or they put them on conference calls, and I think that's great. I'd love for the Texans to do it because, you know, there's still interest in it, and we've got time and the space to do it. And so I hope they do, but I don't expect to hear from O'Brien before his pre-draft news conference, which is like 3 or 4 days before the draft. And that will be all about Hopkins and the trade. And there's talk about moving the draft back to May. So that means it'd be even longer.
John McClain joining us for his weekly visit. John, the free agency signing, I guess, what are your thoughts on sort of the sum total that the Texans have done in free agency so far? How much is there left to address with this team via free agency, and how active do you think they'll be?
Well, John and Landry asked me yesterday to grade the moves. I graded Hopkins' trade an F-, Randall Cobb a B, because Cobb is an inside receiver. I wrote a column for Sunday about all the problems they've had with inside receivers, and he should be able to solidify it for a year or two. And they've got Fuller and Steele's outside going into the last year of their contracts. So we know they're going to have to use that first pick in the second round on a wide receiver. But I also think these guys they've signed, Eric Murray, I understand he's a slot corner and he's a backup safety. And I think that he's insurance inside. They'd like to keep Bradley Roby outside, even though he can play inside. They re-signed Vernon Hargraves to a one-year deal to play inside. So Murray played in the slot pretty well off the bench in Cleveland, and the way they're paying him, they expect him to be the third safety behind replacing Jahlil Adai, and he's a good special teams player. So they try to make moves, and they want to make sure a guy can contribute on special teams because there's so much emphasis on it, and it was highly improved last year. But the other guys, Jalen Watkins and at Brent, the offensive line, I think it's not Cavell. Aaron Wilson pronounced it yesterday after looked it up. It's how it sounds. But anyway, those guys are competing for backup jobs, and I expect they'll sign some more guys like that.
Well, yeah, and that's the question I have for you, John, is typically the second week and the third week of free agency gets pretty interesting because that's where you start getting the more bargain players, guys that are good starters but aren't marquee names. Where it seems now with the coronavirus, everything is slowed down to a trickle. Are teams mostly just at this point concerned about signing guys that they want to know more about and maybe perhaps especially have their own doctors take a look at?
I think anybody that's had any kind of physical issue, yes. I think in the Texans' case, they're watching their money because they've got a budget for those extensions they want to sign. But there's still a lot of guys out there. You know, sometimes it goes to June 1st before some guys take one-year deals for just above the minimum. And I'm sure there's a lot of players who are very unhappy that, like, they haven't gotten more money, like Jadeveon Clowney. I'm sure he was hoping to get $100 million, which he couldn't get here. Now it looks like he may have to sign a 1 or 2 year deal, maybe return to the Seahawks and stay healthy, play well, and then get a bigger deal the next year. But what I'm really interested in is Clowney is one of three former first overall picks with Cam Newton and Jameis Winston who are available and seeing where they land. And you go back to the draft in which Winston and Mariota were the first and second picks, and that just shows you what can happen. I still, Cam Newton, I wouldn't touch him till my doctors could give him a physical. I'm expecting that it'll be a while before he signs, but Winston's the one I'm really interested in, considering at times last year he played great and then at times he was awful, and see if there's a team out there with a coach who thinks, well, just because Dirk Cutter and just because Bruce Arians couldn't do it, I can do it. I would have been interested to see what Winston could have done with John Gruden, but that's not going to happen.
John, who's left? Oh, sorry, Seth.
No, that's all right. John, I'm glad you mentioned Jadeveon Clowney, because there's a couple of questions I had about him, which are, one, is his value now and how the team looks at him now, is it different than it was last year, you know, around the time the season started? Because, A, Clowney was coming off of a much better season in 2018 than he is this year. And two, so I guess this is the second question, is Clowney's sports hernia, the surgery, the fact that he struggled through the year, have teams had a little bit more of a red flag this year than perhaps they did last year with him?
Oh, yeah, because that serious surgery, it hampered him last year. He had 3 sacks. He had 1 great game on national TV when Seattle went to San Francisco and won, and people saw what he's capable of doing, which we saw what he was capable of doing, but he never did it on a really consistent basis. And so I guarantee you teams are worried about him physically, except Seattle. And that's why I think he'll eventually end up back at Seattle on a 1 or 2 year deal, maybe a 1 year deal. Hope he can stay healthy and then cash in. But last year, even coming off that kind of year, they waited too late. They should have franchised him, kept him for a year, franchised him and traded him, and that let that get away with him. And it amounted to a fire sale. And so Seattle was able to get him on the 1 year deal. I know the Seahawks want him back, but they're not going to pay him big money.
John, how crazy is it that the one of the things that we were lauding Clowney for and his representation was that they leveraged their situation into getting the Seahawks' ability to use the franchise tag removed from the deal? And if he does go back to the Seahawks on a 1 year deal, there's a really good chance it's going to be less than what the franchise tag would have been. You know what I mean? Like, it's the Seahawks, had they had it available, might have just said, hey, we're going to use this, if nothing else, just to trade the guy and move him. That Clowney may have jobbed himself out of a few million bucks by what looked like a really smart move at the time.
Yeah, that would be amazing to think about that. And maybe they would give him a 1 year deal for what the franchise tag is. But on the other hand, when you give that 1 year deal, that's a big chunk out of your salary cap. Yeah. And I haven't looked lately to see where the Seahawks stand, but I don't think their cap situation is real good right now. So maybe he'll go to a team on a 1 year deal that has, they could pay him $16-17 million a year, but he might get less.
It's John McClain. He's brought to you by hornsolutions.net. Joins us each and every week, and he is with us here for the 8 o'clock hour on Wednesday. As usual, we have not talked Tom Brady yet. So let's get John's thoughts on Tom Brady, what expectations should be both for the Bucs and for Brady individually, because there's a lot of stuff in Brady's contract that's going to require Tom Brady to play at a high level to make the max that he can make. What are the chances that happens? We'll bounce that off of the general John McClain next. We got John?
John,
you guys have me?
John might have us. Do you have me, Sean?
I'm unmuted.
There's John.
I think I hear John. John, are you there?
Hi, John.
Seth, would you like to answer for John?
Let me ask. What did he say?
I'm back.
Okay.
Oh,
there we go.
You asked me about Tom Brady.
I did.
I think that it's going to be so much fun to see who they play on their national TV games. Usually, as we all know, the schedule comes out the third week of April. And the schedule makers, you think about the unprecedented times because of coronavirus and not knowing where Brady was going to be, wreaked havoc with those guys who were holed up in offices in New York at the NFL trying to figure out who to put on against whom and when. And so now they know Brady's available for all the national TV appearances, and they've got a very interesting schedule. I'd certainly love to see Brady going against Drew Brees 2 times, but so that's going to be so much fun to watch. If assuming it's at a time when I can do it, I will be watching Brady and the Bucks play whoever they play. I'll also kind of watch the Patriots at first, because if Jarrett Stidham is their quarterback, I want to see how he does as Brady's replacement. But I would imagine when Brady's playing a big game, the ratings will be through the roof, because what NFL fan is not interested in how he does with the Buccaneers in his at 43 years old.
You know, John, the first thing I thought of this morning when I started thinking about the Patriots versus Tom Brady and the Bucs was, when do these guys actually play again? And it's actually relatively soon. It's next season. So if Tom Brady makes it through this year, they're going to play in New England next year.
Can you imagine? I'm assuming, of course, he would be cheered wildly. Nobody's going to boo Brady. Everybody's mad at Belichick. They're not mad at Kraft. I thought one of the most interesting things that I read was by Tom Curran from NBC Boston. Tom's covered them for a long time for the Providence Journal. Then he went into TV, and he still writes as well as does television. And he wrote this week that they didn't know Brady was leaving until that Sunday night when he went over and told Kraft. And so many people in the media, locally and nationally, had chastised Belichick for not talking to Brady. And Brady said he had talked to Belichick that night on the phone. So they did have a conversation. But they thought at that time, according to Tom Curran, they still might be able to get him back. And he told him it was time to move on. And it was not an issue over money, although most people believe if they'd offered him a deal like the Buccaneers have, then he would have stayed. But they never did, going back to last year when they redid his contract to make sure that he was in the last year and they would not franchise him.
John, here I'm looking at the Buccaneers' opponents, home and away. We obviously don't know when these games are going to be played. That'll be another interesting thing, too. The NFL usually announces their schedule in mid-April. I wonder if this whole pandemic that we're in right now is going to affect that. Anyways, he's got obviously two. You tell me, John, which of these intrigue you the most? The two games against Breeze, two games against Matt Ryan, where there is Super Bowl history between the two quarterbacks, 28-3. They have a home game against Aaron Rodgers. He has a home game against Kirk Cousins. He has a home game against Patrick Mahomes. Who knows who the Chargers wind up signing? If they sign Cam Newton and they've got a home game there. Their road games are a little less intriguing. Chicago, Detroit, Denver, the Giants. They have a trip to Las Vegas. Maybe that's intriguing. John, which of those intrigue you maybe the most? One and two, let's say.
Well, New Orleans, because it's a division game and yep. The Buccaneers are trying to supplant the Saints as division champion. Kansas City, the defending Super Bowl champion. And then I'd love to see him against Aaron Rodgers. And if he's going to be on five times, I would think Vegas and maybe one of those Atlanta games. But those are certainly interesting games that should be exciting because of the quarterbacks and, of course, Vegas. Because anything really this season that's played in Las Vegas is going to get a lot of attention because it's a first.
John, I've seen a lot of people say that they don't even expect Brady to be one of the top two quarterbacks in his division, with a lot of people saying Matt Ryan's going to have a better year than Tom Brady. I look at Tom Brady and the weapons he has on the outside, and I look at Matt Ryan and how it went for him last year, especially earlier in the season. I have a hard time thinking that Matt Ryan's going to be better than Tom Brady this year. Am I crazy?
Nope, I agree with you, Seth. I think Ryan may throw for a lot of yards again because they're a passing team. He's got good receivers, but to me, if you're throwing for almost 5,000 yards and you're 8-8, it's not the same if you're Brady throwing for 4,000 and you got a chance to win the division and maybe you become a Super Bowl contender. And the Falcons are fine, but they don't have the pizzazz that the Buccaneers will. Now, the Buccaneers still need some things. They have the 14th overall pick. I'm sure this is not going to happen, but Godwin can play inside, Evans outside. What if they drafted a receiver like the one that was left over between CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy, or Henry Ruggs, and they plugged in the other one on the outside? Can you imagine the plethora of weapons and speed and size that Brady would have? He still needs a running back who can catch. We all know how much he likes to throw to backs. It seems to me that would be the easiest thing for him to get. And they could also use that 14th pick on get one of those top offensive tackles to help protect him. And Pro Football Focus said they were better at pass protection than most people thought. But that's one reason Winston did a good job avoiding sacks and shaken away from him because he's got great size. And Brady, of course, when he gets hit, he usually goes down. But I would take Brady's season over Ryan's season any day of the week.
All right. I have a prediction. And Seth, I have a follow-up question to this prediction for John as we talk to John McClain, brought to you by hornsolutions.net. Prediction. The Patriots, and that's what my follow-up question is going to be about, the Patriots maybe are kind of mucking their way through a subpar season. Looks like they won't make the playoffs. John, trade deadline, the Buccaneers trade draft equity to the Patriots for Julian Edelman to work the slot for Tom Brady. How you like them apples?
I think that'd be good, but I think Chris Godwin's a really good inside receiver. And I can't imagine that the Patriots would do that. But it would certainly be intriguing, and you know Brady would love it because those two go together like bacon and eggs.
Yeah, so my follow-up is, where do the Patriots go from here? Who is the starting quarterback, John, for the Patriots in week one of the 2020 regular season?
They have a terrible cap problem, and I think it'll be Jared Stidham. They drafted Stidham in the fourth round. He didn't throw many passes, but they got to see him every day. When Tom Brady didn't do anything as a rookie in 2000, and when Drew Bledsoe got hurt, they put him in, and the rest is history. And I'm not saying Stidham's going to be Brady, but I'm saying this. If Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels like Stidham enough, based on what they have seen, to start him, that means he's got a chance to be pretty good, even though, like Brady, he's not going to have many weapons around him. They have serious cap issues. I don't see them taking on a quarterback that can take up the rest of their cap. So I would say Jared Stidham, and I think it's very interesting when the Texans play the Patriots here this year. It'll be the first time without Brady, and it would be great if it's Stidham, who's a Texan who began his career Baylor, and of course, we all know he's Tad Brown, the Rockets president's son-in-law.
John, it's gotten pretty easy over the last several years to predict which position the Texans will take with their first pick. Now they've got two picks in the second round. It's a draft that's very, very heavy with promising wide receiver prospects, and yet the Texans also need help at the cornerback position. If you had to bet, are the Texans going to take a wide receiver or a cornerback first or another position altogether?
Since the Hopkins trade was made, Aaron Wilson and I have done our seventh and eighth mock drafts that we post every Tuesday on TexasSportsNation.com. And both of us, I have had them taking a receiver with the 40th pick. I have them taking a defensive lineman with the 57th pick. And I think when they re-signed Bradley Roby, because I didn't think Roby would be back, then when they came back from the combine, They started talking more seriously about bringing him back. So I think when they brought him back and they re-signed Vernon Hargraves and they signed Eric Murray, who can also cover slot receivers as well as replace Jahlil Adai as a backup safety, I think that second pick has got to be somebody who can rush. Last week I had Texas A&M defensive tackle Justin Matabike. This week I have Auburn defensive tackle Marlon Davidson. Both can play outside or inside. But it still could be, if they have a higher-rated corner, it could be a corner because you can never have too many.
John, did Carlos Hyde overplay his hand?
Sure looks like it. It turned down $5 million a year on a two-year deal. According to Aaron Wilson, what he reported, that's the same deal that Baltimore gave Mark Ingram, and I think he had 1,070 yards and 6 touchdowns. That was his best season. I don't see him getting $5 million a year based on the market out there, so I would say he definitely overplayed his hand.
Well, John, do you think the Texans still need another running back, given David Johnson's injury history and that Duke Johnson's not really a workhorse back? Is there a chance that Carlos Hyde still ends up back on this team?
Boy, wouldn't that be something, Seth, if he came back down to earth and ended up taking like $2 million a year? I mean, they could afford to give it to him. Their plan right now is for David Johnson to be the starter, but you're right. Duke Johnson's not going to be the heavy-duty guy on this team. He's a nice complement to the starter, and they don't want to get in a situation like they were in last year when Lamar Miller went down for the year and they made the trade with Kansas City for Hyde, which worked out great. But I do think that's something they're going to have to think about. Right now, they've got They've got Buddy Howell. I can't remember. Buddy's a special teams player. So I would think they need another veteran back. Maybe they take a look back low in the draft, somebody who's real good at special teams, and see if he can help. But if Johnson gets hurt, they're in trouble because they depend so much on the running game. When Will Fuller was out last year, they ran the ball so much, they were third in rushing in those games in which he was out. So their style changed without Fuller. And because we're pretty sure that Fuller is going to get hurt this year, will Bill O'Brien continue to run the ball more? And if so, he may need another veteran.
All right, I'm going to Adam Schefter is proposing an interesting idea relative to the NFL draft. And I want to see what John McClain's reaction to it is. So we will do that and a whole lot more. One more segment to go with John McClain is brought to you by hornsolutions.net, and we will get to that next. You're listening to Pain and Pain. So, John, I'm going to read a tweet from Trey Wingo, fellow Baylor alum for you. And I'm going to assume we have John there. So Adam Schefter dropped this one on us. This is on ESPN this morning, apparently. If the NFL is going to go forward with the draft, how about making it a 7-night event, one night per round, or one round per night, I should say. John, what do you think about the idea of stretching the NFL draft out over 7 days?
They've never done it, so I wouldn't expect them to start doing it at a time like this. It's an interesting theory, and I think it would be fun because there would be quite an hour or two pre-draft of every pick. But can you imagine getting down to 6th and 7th rounds? People who would actually want to watch that?
I think some real football nerds would like to watch it. To me, the interesting thing about it would be maybe not so much at the back end, but certainly the first couple, 2-3 days would be the time in between the draft. It would be when they separated the first round, John, from everything else, it created that 20-hour period between round one and round two, where there was a potential for a lot of deals to get made for teams to kind of get guys that they thought were first round talents that they could now take at the top of the second round. I don't know that sort of dynamic would exist in, you know, say rounds 5, 6, and 7, but I could see where rounds 1, 2, 3, and maybe even the top of 4, that the amount of time in between the rounds, which is basically a full day, where there would be a lot of chatter about deal making going on because you've got a whole day to assess, okay, who are the best 10 or 15 players on the board?
It would almost be like fantasy football. I tell you, if you wanted to see something really interesting, have the free agent frenzy after the draft, those guys who are passed up, because they start talking to agents in the 5th or 6th round. Well, if you're down there and getting drafted, we would love to get him. And the agent, of course, wants multiple teams trying to get their guy. I would rather be undrafted than be in the 7th round because you have options. And somehow put that free agent frenzy, it'd be like putting the New York Stock Exchange on as teams scramble in those initial hours after the draft to sign a lot of guys who end up being really good players.
You know, it's interesting, John, because I feel like that's more of a long-term topic or discussion where I catch myself doing this. And I think people in responding to this 7 rounds over 7 days idea have kind of gotten into that mode where sometimes you respond to things like you're forgetting, oh, wait, yeah, we're in an extraordinary time right now. Because, okay, 7 rounds over 7 days, the NFL's never done it before. It wouldn't be a long-term fix or anything. I think it would be more that people are stuck at home. We've seen it just with our listeners, like when people are streaming, when they're listening, how long they're listening for. All of it's changed just because people have more time to sit around and listen to the radio compared to like their 30-minute commute or whatever it is typically. So I think for this year alone, I think people would enjoy just sitting around, even in the 6th round, and having time to look at like, oh, who's available tomorrow? And as I'm sitting there, do it at noon. Who the hell gives it? You know, who cares? Everything's out of whack right now. And it might just be for the good of America, John. Can I go there? It's a pleasant diversion for people who are just desperate for sports news.
For the good of America, yes. The NFL. Of course, the NFL, it's a great time for the NFL right now. You know, a lot of people thought they should have delayed free agency. And as it is, it's been a tremendous boon to a lot of people who are depressed and worried about the coronavirus and the ramifications. But usually Adam Schefter doesn't put out an idea unless somebody at the league office or a team has floated it to him. So I imagine that's something that they want to see what the reaction is. And you know, the NFL, the more they can be on TV, the more they're going to like it. And people want to watch because they always get higher ratings than anybody else. So people may find this hard to believe. The draft used to be during the college season. And it also used to be 18 rounds, then 12, then 10, then it got down to 8, and finally 7. And it's amazing, going back to the old days, how many guys, even with an 18-round draft, were not drafted and ended up in the Pro Football of Fame because most of the scouting came from preseason magazines that general managers would look at, specifically Street and Smith's football, and they would draft players out of those magazines, if you could believe it.
John McClain joining us for his weekly visit. John, it was about 10 days ago maybe that the new CBA was approved by a razor-thin margin by the players. Can you imagine what it would be like right now, given where the nation is, if the NFL had not approved the CBA? Am I overstating things by thinking like, man, this would be a big talking point that not only, especially given the distraction that the NFL has been for us over the last 10 days, if the players had turned that down and that we were looking at not only a possibility of a truncated season, but labor unrest at the back end of that season?
Yeah, if they had turned it down, you know, they have another year, and I don't think there would have been any negotiations anytime soon. They would have heated up after probably late in the season, as you mentioned, Sean. But there would have been a lot of sniping on social media, maybe publicly, among the players who wanted it and the players who didn't. I think I told you this before, what bothers me is almost 500 players didn't vote. And all you got to do is get on your computer and vote yes or no, and almost 500 players didn't, which is a great example of why NFL players are not united. They've never been united because of how the owners run football. But it would have been a topic of conversation, and they would have gone to the current rules we've just gone through. And according to the league and things that they put out, there wouldn't have been as much money to spend. And a lot of guys got immediate raises. So I'm glad it passed, because there's nothing to me more boring and fans having to listen to talk about labor. Fans want to know, are they going to play and who's on my team?
Well, John, I guess how far do the contingency plans go at this point? Are most NFL owners and coaches expecting to start in September this year?
I don't think anybody has a clue. You know, Mickey Loomis of the Saints came out yesterday and said he thinks they should push back the draft. I think teams are going to, without being able to have pro days and private workouts, maybe they feel like if they push it back, maybe the people will have the ban on travel lifted and they can bring in people. But also, it may just give them more time to go back and watch game tape. What could be bad about that compared to seeing a guy run around in his shorts and T-shirts? Another thing, like the interviews that so many people put a lot of stock in, like when you bring a player in or you go to dinner with him after his pro day, you can still do that on video conferencing and Skype. You can still look in his eyes. You can still put him on a grease board and watch what he does on that grease board. So I think most people would like to have it pushed back. So far, the NFL has given no indication that it will do that.
John, can we safely cross off color commentator off of the desired career choices for Peyton Manning at this point, given that he turned down a record offer from Monday Night Football?
If it's true that he turned down more money per year than he ever made as a quarterback, it's because he's got a lot of money. He likes spending time with his family in Denver. No telling how many other homes they have. But also, as we've talked about, he wants to run a franchise, and I'm guessing nobody's given him that chance. I think I've told this story about John Elway came to Houston and had dinner with Bob McNair at River Oaks Country Club because he wanted to be the Texans' first general manager. And McNair told me, he told Elway, you had a great career. You might be a great general manager, but you need some experience, either as an assistant are running a team to show NFL teams you can do it. So he went back and he ran the Colorado Crush Arena League team for Pat Bowlen, and then they moved him over to be the GM in replace of Brian Sanders when they had a bad season, and the rest is history. Now, Peyton, I don't know. He's not done it. I'm sure he would be successful because he's been successful at everything, but that is his goal, and to turn down $20 million a year for about 3 days' work a week, whew, wouldn't you like to be able to do that?
Yes.
John, has there been any new revelation maybe that I've missed? Because I've read all your stuff over the course of the last week and I've listened to you on our station.
Well, thank you very much, Seth.
Are you starting to get any more of a better picture or a better understanding of exactly what the relationship was between DeAndre Hopkins and Bill O'Brien and maybe even Jack Easterby?
I have no clue about Easterby, but O'Brien's relationship with Hopkins wasn't any different when he traded him than it has been for the last two or three years. Now, Albert Breer from SI.com wrote Monday in his Monday Morning Quarterback why Hopkins was traded, that O'Brien didn't think he was a good teammate. But I'll tell you, it depends on your version of a teammate. To me, a good teammate is a guy that keeps his mouth shut unless he's a good vocal leader and leads by example on the field, plays every game, plays injured, and gives his all on every game. And DeAndre Hopkins did that. And no, he didn't practice most of the time because he said he was hurt. But so what? And as far as having any influence on other receivers, I never saw Will Fuller doing anything based on what DeAndre Hopkins did. If he was following Hopkins, he would have stayed on the field more.
John, let me ask you this, because I haven't asked anybody this yet, but I'm just curious, in this offseason where the Texans have paid guys like Eric Murray and Randall Cobb more money than people would expect. You know, maybe ultimately they end up being competitive contracts. They paid Whitney Mercilus more than I think a lot of people expected Whitney Mercilus would have been paid when they renegotiated him during the season. Is there any chance at all, or have you heard anything that perhaps DJ Reader and Bill O'Brien weren't on the same page for them to not pay DJ Reader what he wanted?
No, I've never heard that. O'Brien never. Reader was a great teammate, great guy. O'Brien loved Reader, but they made up their mind they would spend about $10 million. They weren't going to spend $13.25 on DJ because he was great against the run. He was a good teammate, but they weren't going to pay that kind of money for a guy that wasn't a pass rusher. Now they're going to have to replace him by, he was a fifth-round pick. They're going to have to use a pick like that to get another nose tackle unless they sign a cheap veteran, because a higher pick isn't going to be a nose tackle. It's got to be somebody they believe can help with the pass rush. And one of the things for me is I love dealing with Reader. He was always cooperative. He was always trying to give you an earnest answer. And I told my friends that cover the Bengals, you're going to love this guy on and off the field.
John, do you think that at some point we will hear from Jack Easterby in the form of a press conference? And if so, what is your first question going to be to Jack Easterby?
First of all, I guess as his new role of executive vice president of football operations, at some point we'll get to talk to Easterby. What I'd like to know is from Jack, what exactly do you do? Now, I know what I've been told. Bill O'Brien's the general manager, puts him over everything, but he's messing with personnel and coaching. So Easterby oversees everything else and assists O'Brien on anything that he needs. And I'm not exactly sure what I would ask him because I don't know exactly what he does. Do you say, Jack, what'd you think about the Hopkins trade and what was your role in it, if anything? I know when we talked to O'Brien, the first questions we're going to ask, and I don't care if the draft's pushed back to July, is all about the Hopkins trade.
You know, Albert Breer, who you started off this hour talking about, because Albert Breer is very plugged in New England. Albert Breer, every time seemingly he talks about the Texans, he mentions Jack Easterby. He either writes it or he talks about it on his podcast. And with the Hopkins trade specifically, he's mentioned a couple times, either in print or verbally, that this is part of Jack Easterby's creation of a certain culture with the Texans. So whether that's just his conjecture or him guessing or whether that's something he's heard from the Texans. I think that his fingerprints are probably all over this Hopkins trade.
It may have been, but this is O'Brien's decision, and O'Brien's had a chance to trade him in the past to New England. He turned him down. I don't know who else would have tried to get him, but I don't think he may have influenced O'Brien, but it was his decision, and Cal McNair had to sign off on it. Usually when I see a writer mentioning somebody a lot, it tells me that person's talking to him. Now, I can't say for sure that Albert Breer's getting information from Jack Easterby. I've only met Easterby once, and that was in last off season. And then I saw him and introduced myself walking down the street at the combine when he and O'Brien were going to talk to agents. And I reintroduced myself and shook hands, and that was it. So I have no relationship with him whatsoever. But sometimes I tell you this, guys I talk to, I hardly ever mention them because I don't want other media people thinking, okay, that's who he's getting information from. But anybody that covered the Patriots, I would think some of those people who are gone would be talking to them, but we have not had that luxury.
John, are you sad that there's going to be no opening day for Major League Baseball tomorrow? When do you think, if you were a betting man, what do you think about the Major League Baseball season starting? When do you think that's going to happen?
Well, let me tell you guys something. The Chronicle, our sports editor, Reed LeMant, sent a thing to all the writers, since there's no opening day, to write for Texas Sports Nation, and it might be in the Chronicle, memories that we've had as fans or as people who've covered it. I've only been to one Astros opening day, and that was 2017, and I had great seats by the Astros on deck circle, and no, I didn't hear any trash can banging, but I've been following them since opening day in 1962 when they beat the Cubs. So that's what I'm writing about, going into that game with a friend of mine since third grade who was at MD Anderson battling cancer, and I got great tickets. And he and I, who used to, when we got our driver's license, would come down from Waco and watch the Astros in the Dome. And then so I took Bill Goss and his wife with Carol and I, and that was an incredible experience for us. Took them into the dining room, and I got to meet Nolan Ryan and some other people, Reed Ryan. So it was a great experience. So I'm bummed because we had tickets, and whenever they play, assuming it doesn't interfere with the Texans, I will make sure I'm there because I want to see the fan response. And I had told Carol, buy every ticket to the first series against the A's because I want to be there when Mike Fiers pitches. And now who knows when's going to happen. I'm guessing maybe about June 1st, everybody says they're going to need a month to get ready after being off so much. I'm guessing they might get 2 weeks and crank it up about June 1st and reduce the games.
Yeah, that's going to get sped up if guys are getting paid based on the percentage of the season that actually takes place. And their players are going to be like, oh, we need 3 days. We'll be good. We got to get paid our money for the regular season.
Another thing they're talking about, and I've heard this on MLB Network, is pushing the season back, and because it would be so cold, playing at neutral site stadiums one time only, like the Super Bowl does, and Houston, of course, has been mentioned as a possibility if they do that.
That'd be kind of cool. John, what else is going on in the Chronicle this week aside from the Astros stuff you just touched on?
We've got podcasts on Texas Sports Nation, got my 8th mock draft on Texas Sports Nation. We're writing and doing stuff every day, and I can't wait to read everybody's memories of Astros opening day. Thank you guys very much. Stay safe. Appreciate you having me as always, and we'll do it again next week. Thank you.
Sounds good. Yeah, we'll appreciate you jumping in as always, John, and we'll see you someday in person again, I'm sure. All right, as we head into the 9 o'clock hour, during the pandemic, you've got to smile a little bit and think about some interesting images. Barstool had a piece that they did where they divided the United States map up into various districts, a la the Hunger Games. Which district would win a U.S. Hunger Games, if it all comes to that? I'm guessing Seth Payne has thoughts on this. We'll get to it next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.